afternoon. Welcome to the National Press Club. My name is Gil Kwong. I'm the president of the club and a national correspondent for Media General Newspapers, writing for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, the Tampa Tribune, and the Winston-Salem Journal. I'd like to welcome the club members in the audience today, as well as your guest, and those of you who are watching us on C-SPAN, listening to us on National Public Radio, or the Internet Global Computer Network. Before introducing our head table guests, I would like to remind you of some of our upcoming events. On Tuesday, March 7th, Edward Shevardnadze, Chairman of the Parliament and Head of State of the Republic of Georgia, will address an unusual evening gathering of the Press Club. On Wednesday, March 16th, Attorney General Janet Reno will join us for Freedom of Information Day. On Thursday, March 17th, we have Pulitzer Prize winner and Poet Laureate Rita Dove. And on Friday, March 18th, John Hume, member of the British Parliament from Derry, Northern Ireland, will discuss negotiations to end the conflict in Northern Ireland. Transcripts and audio and videotapes of this luncheon are available by calling 1-800-500-9911. If you have any questions for our speaker, and I certainly trust that you will, please write them on the cards provided at your table and pass them up to me. I will ask as many as time allows. I'd like now to introduce our head table guests and ask them to stand briefly as I read their names. Please withhold your applause until I've read all of the names. From your right is Karen DeWitt of the New York Times, Richard Hoffmeister, International Documentary Photography, Stephen Green of the Copley News Service, Ken Dalecki, Kiplinger Washington Editors, whose daughter is leaving for Senegal with the Peace Corps tomorrow. Dale McFeeters, Managing Editor of the Scripps Howard News Service. Alice Rivlin, Deputy Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Also has big fans in the audience. Skipping over our speaker for a moment, we have Christy Wise, freelance journalist and chairman of the National Press Club Speakers Committee. Chick Dumbuck, executive director of the National Peace Corps Association. Joan Lowry of the Scripps Howard News Service and the member of the National Press Club Speakers Committee who organized today's luncheon. Donald Frederick of National Geographic. Lauren Stanley of the Knight Ridder Tribune News Service, and Harold Ickes, White House Deputy Chief of Staff. Also, I'd like to thank staff members Melissa Bender, Pat Thornsbury, Melanie Abdel-Dermat, and Jeff Tarbell for organizing today's luncheon. Now, our speaker today is Carol Bellamy, Director of the Peace Corps. There have been a lot of directors of the Peace Corps since it was founded in 1961 by John F. Kennedy in a flurry of idealism, but Carol Bellamy is unique among them. She is the first Peace Corps director who actually served as a Peace Corps volunteer. After graduating from Gettysburg College in 1963, she was sent to the jungles of northern Guatemala, where she ran a school lunch program, vaccinated chickens, and was on the radio every day with a program of health and food advice known as the Housewife's Hour. Not PC here. Now, it's a little known fact that Ms. Bellamy had a secret arrangement with another volunteer there in the jungle. One of them agreed to kill the spiders, and the other agreed to kill the snakes. Lord knows that was a great arrangement for the political life that Ms. Bellamy has pursued since then. As president of the New York City Council, she had to wrangle with both New York, with Governor Mario Cuomo and Mayor Ed Koch. I won't say which one was the spider and which one was the snake. I'll leave that to you. After returning from the Peace Corps, she completed law school at New York University. While working with a private law firm, she volunteered to help found the Lawyers Committee to End the War and the Council of New York Law Associates. That helped her begin to climb the rungs of the New York Democratic politics as a state senator, and for 8 years, beginning in 1978, as the city's council president. She ran for mayor in 1985, the first woman to do so, but she lost to Ed Koch. Then she went where all good liberals go, to investment banking. Twice she sought the job of New York State Comptroller. Now, President Clinton nominated her last summer to be Peace Corps director, and she has promised to return it to the luster of those great years, John F. Kennedy. The Peace Corps itself has been transformed by the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. Volunteers now are teaching business skills in Russia, Ukraine, and several other former Soviet republics. Lately, the Peace Corps has been looking more for MBAs than for chicken vaccinators. Ms. Bellamy insists that the Peace Corps has a major role to play in shaping the post-Cold War world. As she has said, "We are the best bang for the buck in the foreign assistance budget because we are people to people, not government to government." Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in a warm press club welcome for Peace Corps Director Carol Bellamy.
Thank you very much. Well, that wasn't too bad, the spiders and the snakes. I ran into some old friends from early Brooklyn politics, and I was afraid you'd really hear the story of my life. Well, I'm delighted to be here. I would like to thank a few people, to begin with, the Press Club very much for this invitation. I really do appreciate it. And I do appreciate the weather that you provided. It does make me feel right at home here in Washington, D.C. I never knew the true meaning of liberal leave until I moved to Washington. I'd like to thank the members of the Peace Corps staff who've come to attend this lunch. One of the great things about my job as director of the Peace Corps, and I don't want you to think... In the introduction, it was said that I'm going to return it to the past luster. We've had some wonderful directors at Peace Corps and people who work at Peace Corps, and one of the great things about the job is working with just terrific people over at the Peace Corps. So for the folks from Peace Corps who are here and the folks who are back on at 20th and K, I just love working with you. You're really great. I want to thank the former volunteers, and there are a number here. I'm not going to ask everybody to stand, but just in case you were worried that there wouldn't be questions, have no fear. If there are former volunteers in the audience, never a shy group, this group of former volunteers. So would all former volunteers at least raise your hand so they can see who you are? See, we're everywhere. A particular recognition of Chick Dumbach, who heads up the largest organization of return volunteers, and delighted to have him here as well. A very scary group in the audience, because usually, if I were speaking to a group of people in the media, they would be the people I'd be the most concerned about. But now that I'm director of the Peace Corps, the group I'm the most concerned about speaking to are parents, or... Indeed, given the change in age of volunteers, children of volunteers in the field, and there are some out there, so I will try and watch my words if I really tell you what's going on out there. Don't listen. It's fine. Your daughter will do wonderfully in Senegal, and there's another parent of somebody who's in Costa Rica right now. Great programs. Don't worry at all about what's going on. And then just a couple of very wonderful, wonderful friends, and I thank you for being here. Alice Rivlin, the smartest person I know in Washington, D.C., maybe the smartest person I know, who also, bar none, is the number one Skins fan, no matter what their season is. So, and my terrific, famous, and favorite hiking buddy. and my wonderful friend Harold Ickes, who, for whom I suppose I have to thank him for this job, because it was Harold who many years ago introduced me to the present president. And I've told Harold that I know in his present job there's probably never a down day, probably never any bad news, but should he, on just one day in his present position, have the need for some good news out there, I gave him the Peace Corps number. Just call, and we'll come up with a good story for him someday, just in case he needs any good news down there. So, Harold, thank you very much for being here. Well, as I think you are aware, today is our birthday. Peace Corps is celebrating its 33rd anniversary this March 1st. Now, I admit that 33 lacks the ring of a 40 or a 50, but at 33, Peace Corps is in its prime. Part of that comes with 30-plus years of life experience. Another part is due to circumstances which, quite honestly, are beyond our control, global forces at work. Anyway, as the director for all of 6 months, I won't pretend to take credit for all the good things that we've done, but what I would like to do is start off by giving you a context for what Peace Corps looks like in 1994, then to go on to give you some little-known facts, facts that I hope will amplify some of the most common perceptions and also eliminate a few of the misperceptions that are out there about Peace Corps. Finally, conclude with a quick look ahead and then be glad to take any questions that you might have. In the past 3 decades, the world has changed dramatically, and I suppose a cursory review of these changes is quite unnecessary in a room filled with people from the media or people who are involved as you are out there every day. But I do want to make the point that in the same 3 decades, Peace Corps' mission to work with people at the grassroots level to improve their condition, that mission of Peace Corps has not changed. It's remained unchanged. Now, that's not to say that our work has not evolved, but our goals of sustainable development and cross-cultural understanding have proven both timeless and even more timely today. Since 1961, Peace Corps has trained and sent Americans abroad to work at the grassroots level with local leaders, to live in local housing, to eat the local food, and to speak the local language. Actually, something that Nelson Mandela said in a recent Washington Post magazine article struck me. He was explaining why he had learned Afrikaans. And I quote him. He said, "If you talk to a man in a language that he understands, that goes to his head. But if you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart." The work of Peace Corps and its volunteers goes to the heart of the communities where they are assigned. The development is sustained after they leave. This amounts to more than just a transfer of skills or community organizing. There's an outlook that's internalized. Peace Corps volunteers have given hundreds of thousands of people around the world the belief that they themselves can get ahead. This is particularly important today, I think, when we're seeing an increase in poverty, even in countries where the economies, often after opening up, are growing. Large numbers of people around the world are still working outside the economy, and often not through choice. Or in the former Soviet Union, as you mentioned, where the concepts of credit and competition are all new. With the emergence of free market economies around the world, the scope of Peace Corps programming continues to expand. Yes, we are definitely still working to increase food production and to improve education and health and nutrition. But our fastest growing sectors, our fastest growing areas where we are being asked for volunteers, are business development and environmental management. The changes taking place in the world present us with opportunities to expand our efforts. And yet at the same time, as I hope you would expect, they present us with challenges. 33 is a good time to take stock, avert one of those full-blown midlife crises down the road. We are, as I think any vibrant organization should, We are undertaking a comprehensive review of all of our programs to make sure that they are relevant to the year 1994 and indeed are moving us in the right direction toward the year 2000. Truth is, for 33 years, Peace Corps has been running along quite well, other than our ever-tightening budget constraint. I went on my annual hike with Alice this summer, and I don't think we were 5 minutes into the hike before she said, you know, my budget examiner said, don't give her anything on this hike. In any case, other than our ever-tightening budget constraint, and that's appropriate, we understand that, and we're prepared to deal with that. Other than that, we're really under no major outside pressure to reform. We believe we are an example of government that does work. Think of the adjectives that would describe a Peace Corps volunteer: autonomous, resourceful, flexible. Well, we think they pretty much sum up the agency. Today's Peace Corps is everything you thought it was. The news is, it's more. Take the idea that Peace Corps is teachers living in mud huts. Well, we do have teachers living in mud huts. Well, actually, more accurately, thatch roof huts or houses. But let me start off by telling you about a volunteer in Lilongwe, Malawi, a fellow who had been an architect for a high-profile firm in Philadelphia. He's now drawing up plans for low-cost, easy-to-build homes, homes the average city worker can afford. His design is elegant in its simplicity, and he's been asked to replicate his work in a second city. In 1961, if you take just one of our regions, the Intra-America region, Central America and South America, for example, roughly 70% of the population in that region in those days, 30 years ago, was inhabiting rural areas, 30% urban areas. Today, it's just about the opposite. So we have more and more volunteers working in urban areas, secondary cities, if you will, where you may not find a lot of mud huts, but you certainly will find many barrios. It is true that the largest percentage of volunteers are teachers working in education programs. Peace Corps is the largest international teaching of English as a second language organization in the world. But, and you may not know this, with over 900 volunteers working in natural resources management, Peace Corps is also the largest cadre of environmental workers on the ground in the world. Over the next couple of years, for example, volunteers in Costa Rica will have taught 25,000 farmers about reforestation. In November, one of our volunteers, along with about 140 citizens in the Republic, in the Slovak Republic, planted an urban forest in a municipality near Bratislava. They planted 70 trees and something like 100 bushes, all in the rain. And then just a little less than 2 weeks ago, during a recent visit I paid to the Philippines, I helped one of our volunteers replant mangrove trees as part of a coastal restoration project. In 18 months, she, along with the villagers on the island of Catanduanes and the four other volunteers who serve on that island in a small island project in different areas, but they work together, in 18 months, they've planted over 30,000 mangroves. After environmental programs, business development programs comprise Peace Corps' second fastest growing sector. Volunteers, for example, are serving as vital links between international funding and development agencies and Uzbekistan's emerging business, just as an example. They are extending the traditionally centralized grant-making and foreign exchange opportunities to the provinces. To put it more specifically, they have put business associations in touch with each other through a revolutionary new technique that I now find that I can do without: email. And that's Uzbekistan. And then there's business education. Again, I'm just giving you some examples of what's going on out there. Volunteers teaching business studies in Papua New Guinea help their students run school canteens. One of these canteens, I understand, went from being $6,000 in debt to netting $20,000 for their school on Karkar Island. We'll send them over, Alice, when they get back, see that kind of return on their dollar. Now, I wanted to tell you about some of our newer work. On the other hand, this work has not lessened our commitment to what we consider to be our more traditional areas. By those, I mean areas like agriculture and health, very key areas to Peace Corps and will continue to be. But again, we are constantly trying to update our programming in these areas. For example, one of our volunteers in Bolivia has helped villagers of Sucre grow and use plants to make natural dyes in response to an increasing demand for environmentally conscious products. And at last count, there were a number of countries. I'll name some of them: Cameroon, Central African Republic, Malawi, and Thailand. And again, all at the invitation of the governments of these countries, we now have Peace Corps volunteers working in HIV/AIDS education and prevention programs. In fact, for any of you who may have listened to NPR last Friday, I actually visited with one of our volunteers who works at the monastery that's run by the Thai monk as an AIDS hospice. It was actually profiled in that NPR article. This volunteer works with the monastery, a number of volunteers from the Buddhist International Network, and her local villagers of Lo Buri, feeding, caring for, and sometimes just reading for the patients with AIDS. So yes, we do have Aggies living in thatched roof houses and lots of recent liberal arts graduates in their Birkenstocks, or Tevas, as the case may be these days. Actually, most of whom, by the way, and I want to make this point, are probably fluent in at least one other language than English before they come into Peace Corps. Because if they're fluent in French, it always makes it easier for us to train them in Arabic or Wolof or whatever that language is they're going to speak. So, yes, we have the Aggies and we have the liberal arts graduates, and I don't want to downplay their contribution. But we also have middle-aged people in pinstripes and retired teachers in Reeboks. Today's Peace Corps volunteers, actually, we wrote this speech over the last week, and now I have to amend this speech as of today, but I'll read you this line because I'll tell you why. I said, today's Peace Corps volunteers range in age from 18, which is you have to be at least 18 to be in the Peace Corps, to 86. I love to talk about our 86-year-old volunteer. And I talk about him often because people say to me, they say, you know, I thought about it when I was getting out of college, or I really always wanted to do it, but it passed me by. And I say to people, not yet, it hasn't passed you by. Our oldest volunteer, Arthur, is 86. Well, here's the good and bad news. Arthur, who's 86, just finished his service in Hungary. He's been a teacher of English. He actually extended beyond his 2 years. Here's the good news. I found out today that Arthur came to join us today. So, Arthur, would you stand up? Thank you. So, Arthur, you have to tell me what you eat every day. Anyway, so in any case, I suspect we've got at least one 85-year-old out there. So as you can see, the range of volunteers is in age-wise is a broad one. 1 out of 10, in fact, is over the age of 50. 12% are minorities. We have a Peace Corps, I hope, that, as President Clinton likes to say, looks like America, and we ought to. It can be a challenge in terms of recruitment and training. I'll give you an example. I can say this because I'm over the age of 50. We've learned, for example, that teaching languages to those of us who are a little bit over the age of 50 might take a little longer, but we build that into training at this point. We believe that we at Peace Corps are up to the challenge. In the past several years, and I see somebody who is very important to this, so Jim Ekstrom, we've done a lot of work on our programming. Those early days, for those of you who are as old as I am when Peace Corps first started, and those were great days, but when they threw us in there, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed liberal arts graduates, go in there, Bellamy, and do something. Well, those days of kind of arriving at site and essentially winging it are over at this point. Now every volunteer actually has a real job to do. We work closely with the countries requesting volunteers to formulate job descriptions accompanied by quite detailed work plans. Doesn't mean they can't go on and do some additional things that they find are appropriate to do once they get there. But there is a job to do. As the economies develop, countries are increasingly requesting sophisticated volunteers. Where teachers were once needed, it's not unusual to get a request for a teacher trainer with a master's in education and 5 years teaching experience. MBAs, engineers, and healthcare professionals are also in significant demand. But I do want to guard against what I call, and what I've heard called, skills creep. I like to jokingly use the example of a country that comes in and says to the local Peace Corps director, we need 3 brain surgeons who speak Swahili. The local Peace Corps director says, sure, no problem. Calls back to Washington, to the recruiting people, says, we need 3 brain surgeons who speak Swahili. The local recruiting people say, oh, no, they've done it to us again. Grumble, grumble, but they go out and they find at least 2 brain surgeons who speak Swahili. When all is said and done, what they really needed were 2 nurses and a physician's assistant. It doesn't mean they didn't need good, skilled people, but it is important to have this give and take in terms of what the actual needs are and how we can meet those needs. So I do want to think that we can be more discerning. I don't want to say that we're going to be dictatorial. I want us to continue to meet requests. But I do want to assure the Peace Corps continues to be a broad-based volunteer service corps. I hope to see us continue to have a good, healthy balance of BA, liberal arts graduates, generalists in our volunteer mix, because we can train those generals, and they turn out to have that I'm not going to say je ne sais quoi, because we know what it is that makes that is the best thing you can find in a volunteer, and that's flexibility to meet changing circumstances. And we've learned how to do it. We have a variety of models. For example, we can take an MBA with 15 years work experience in a place like Poland and make her a resource, like we would here in the United States, working with teams of volunteers. Some MBAs, some BAs in business science, some community organizers. It's a concept that we can use, the concept of clustering, pairing generalists with specialists. It's been successful in many places. I saw an example in the Ivory Coast. Engineers working at the municipal level, trained engineers, planning water sanitation and waste disposal, while a community organizer educates the residents about proper waste disposal, what can be disposed of, when and where. The same organizer can then ask the engineer to calculate the proper grade for a ramp construction project, which will solve the water runoff problem. So we know how to make this work. Now, the only negative thing, I suppose, that I ever hear about Peace Corps, maybe I just take it as a negative thing, I don't mean that it's negative, but it is, gee, Peace Corps, what a great idea. Is this Peace Corps still around? I hear that sometimes. Well, it sure is. With 6,500 volunteers in the field right now, Peace Corps has more volunteers than any time in the past 15 years. It is my goal as director to have 7,500 volunteers in the field. That would be more than we've had in 20 years. That number represents, in my opinion, moderate growth and is a realistic and achievable goal. We have the requests, and we have the programming and volunteer delivery system to assure that we have the right volunteers for the jobs. And I believe if we spend our resources wisely, we can achieve that goal. In 1994, Peace Corps has volunteers speaking over 200 languages and dialects in 96 countries. We've made 30 successful new country entries since 1990. I am proud of those facts, but let me assure you I am not bound by them. And what I mean to say is we need to look at countries where programs have accomplished their goals and move on to new programs or move out of those countries, particularly countries where we've been a long time. We need to make sure that there's still a reason to be there. And we need to take a look at those countries where political instability, and by that I just don't mean the government, but I also mean tribal and ethnic instability as well, where political instability thwarts our effectiveness, causes us to pull out, lay low, re-enter, and quite possibly repeat what I can tell you is a costly cycle all the way around, financially, psychologically to the volunteers, who often don't get a chance to say goodbye to their friends, and so on. We want to be in countries where programs can make a difference. At the same time, we are always open, and at the same time that we're taking a look at our longstanding countries, we're always open to new opportunities, whether they come from South Africa or Southeast Asia or anywhere else. Right now, we have 18 volunteers in China, and we have just recently received official requests from Cambodia and Eritrea. I hope, again, budget willing, to find a way to get volunteers over there as soon as possible. I've saved our biggest little-known fact for last, I suppose. Our pool of approximately 140,000 returned volunteers. They represent, among others, a tangible contribution that Peace Corps has made to foreign policy. Thousands of us now work in foreign policy and foreign assistance agencies, the State Department, AID, World Bank. One-third of CARE's overseas staff is former Peace Corps volunteers. Six present members of Congress are former volunteers. Three Democrats and three Republicans. Thank you, Lord. My good friend Donna Shalala, a former volunteer, she always reminds me, 62 to 64. In Iran, I was 63 to 65. Donna serves in the President's cabinet. Drew Days is the Solicitor General. We're everywhere. Returned Peace Corps volunteers also head the Chicago Bears and Levi Strauss. They have written for the Wall Street Journal and People magazine. And many, many are teachers and healthcare workers. Returned Peace Corps volunteers are committed to service and will lead and train many of President Clinton's national service participants next year. And at a time when Americans at large are looking inward, returned Peace Corps volunteers are committed internationalists, cross-cultural ambassadors, if you will. We also have two domestic programs. The first, Worldwide Schools, helps kids put a face on a place. 70% of our current 6,500 volunteers and 2,000 of our alumni return volunteers are matched with almost 5,000 classrooms across the country. The second program, Peace Corps Fellowships, offer at this point annually 275 return volunteers low or no-cost tuition in graduate study programs in return for their ongoing work in hard-to-staff schools, public health facilities, social service agencies, and business or community development initiatives in places like Miami, El Paso, Detroit, Chicago, New York, and L.A. As Peace Corps matures at home, generations who are taught by Peace Corps volunteers are maturing around the world. Just before I left for a trip to Africa in November, I actually met at Peace Corps headquarters with the president of Niger and about eight of his senior aides. And in the course of the meeting, we discovered that three of those senior aides had been taught by Peace Corps volunteers. And we're not just talking about senior aides. The presidents of Eritrea, Ghana, and Uganda were also taught by Peace Corps volunteers. While the international development community seems in agreement that the Peace Corps model of grassroots development does work, its results are sometimes hard to quantify. We can't begin to measure the impact that comes of the personal friendships, the cross-cultural understanding, the prominence of Peace Corps, educated foreign officials, both here and abroad. Still, for all these contributions, for the schools, the agriculture, business, and healthcare delivery systems that Peace Corps has built, there's not a day that's gone by in these 6 months of this wonderful job that I have, not a morning when I read the paper that there's a little impatient voice inside me that yells, although if it's my voice, it's probably a loud, impatient voice that yells, that we need to be doing more. International development takes time. Anyone in the field will agree that it does. It takes patience. It takes time. In some cases, it takes more than a decade to merely build trust, the foundation for a future. Peace Corps, as an agency, embodies, after 33 years, the timeless values of the baby boomer era in which it was born. Peace, adventure, possibility. But it's the qualities of its volunteers, resourcefulness, flexibility, and experience that will continue to carry our ageless mission of promoting peace, no matter how complicated the world, well into the 21st century. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak today.
Thank you very much, Ms. excuse me. Let's start that again. Thank you very much, Ms. Bellamy. First question comes from, says, despite all the vocal support the Clinton administration has given the Peace Corps, the Bush administration gave the Corps more financial support. This did not, I don't think this came from Ms. Rivlin here. How do you explain this?
Actually, realistically, the Peace Corps has, over the years, and people have different views of this, I'm often asked, well, gee, Peace Corps probably got less money during the Republican days. The reality is, whether it's been a Democrat or a Republican administration, Peace Corps' budget has had modest increases each year since Peace Corps has been in business. And I think, again, that's to the tribute of the Corps and the fact that whatever our politics, Peace Corps as an entity has not been has not played partisan politics, and I think that's to the credit of everybody. So, in fact, even this year, we're going through the budget process heading into fiscal year, we're in fiscal year 94, heading into fiscal year 95, even in the first cut, the passback, if you will, from in the president's budget, and we still have the year to continue to work on this. We've been given a, it's modest, but we've been given a small but modest increase in our budget. My view, I come out of state and local government. My experience in state and local government, I say, and I shouldn't say this to a group of Washington folks, but it is relatively unique, and this is not a partisan comment, it's a state and local government comment. We learn to balance our budgets without... I was going to make a political comment. We learn to do it on our own, actually. And so my view is we will live within our budgets. We will continue, I hope, to enjoy modest growth, which we've enjoyed in the past in both kinds of administrations. And we will try and use our dollars as wisely as possible. So that's what we're about in Peace Corps budget-wise. We will continue. We will not turn down any money that they would like to give us additionally. And we've enjoyed good support on the Hill, and we believe, as I've said often, that as foreign assistance dollars go, that we are a very, very good bang for the buck, and that the taxpayer's dollar goes a long distance, that single dollar, largely because, as you know, our volunteers get on a monthly basis basically a subsistence amount to live each month, and then they get a end of service adjustment at that point, but it's not a huge amount of money. So we think we're a good bang for the buck, but we will make sure that we use our dollars wisely.
Two related questions here. First one is, why isn't the Peace Corps service covered by the Clinton National Service Act, which offers $15,000 post-service benefit? And doesn't that hurt the Peace Corps, and will the National Service Act siphon off Peace Corps volunteers?
Well, actually, there was some discussion at one point about Peace Corps being included in the National Service Act. And this was before I came, but I think it was ultimately concluded, and I think appropriately concluded, that it was that Peace Corps should be separate from National Service. We are very strong supporters of National Service. And actually, I don't believe that National Service will in any way hurt Peace Corps. I think National Service helps Peace Corps, and I will tell you how. But Peace Corps did have an earlier experience of being merged into an overall umbrella agency, the action agency, a fine agency, but wasn't the best experience for Peace Corps. And so having learned from that experience, having had that model, we felt it was very important in Peace Corps that there remain this independence but good working relationship. The close of service amount at the end is different. Our volunteers basically earn $200 a month for the time they are in Peace Corps, which means since they are there basically a little bit more than 2 years, if you include their training, they generally come home with a readjustment allowance of about $5,400. Nobody joins Peace Corps to A, get wealthy, or B, necessarily to pay off their loans. I mean, what Peace Corps can offer is we can generally offer a deferral of loans. What we think Peace Corps volunteers get, and we hope Peace Corps volunteers and return volunteers realize this, is they actually get quite rich from the experience, and we hope it will help them in the future. But the day that we go after volunteers because they're going to get a larger sum of money at the end is a day that I think we've lost the direction that Peace Corps wants to be going in. And I'll still find volunteers in the field who say, couldn't we get a little bit more on that monthly allowance? I understand that. So remember, National Service, that concluding amount is very much to help them with their college education. Most Peace Corps volunteers have had at least some college education before they come in. It's not required. You just have to be 18, an American citizen, and actually you can't have been a member of the CIA. Those are the only, that's written into the law, and you might expect why, because we're out in the field and we're actually doing grassroots people-to-people work. And so money is not the issue in terms of Peace Corps. Now, National Service, we have done a couple things. Actually, we've Chris Hedrick, who heads up our Return Volunteer Services, is along with one other person, are our key liaisons with National Service. We are developing a good, strong working relationship. They've discussed with us a number of procedural issues like setting up 800 numbers, like how we recruit, some of these kinds of operational issues. We've sat down with them and talked about how Peace Corps functions in some ways. We expect at some point we will do joint recruiting together. That's not beyond the realm. They would like a number of our returning volunteers to serve as senior trainers. We expect that will occur. So at this point, if anything, every time President Clinton talks about National Service as the domestic Peace Corps, we get another 27 calls of people who want to be Peace Corps volunteers. So at this point, it's working out well. We like our independence. They like their independence, but we have a very close working relationship at this point.
Now, you mentioned some of the countries where you'd like to send some of these extra 1,000 volunteers. The question is, where is the emphasis going to be here? Are you going to be looking at Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, which has been the emphasis in the past couple of years? Or are you going back to the traditional places of South America, Central America, and Africa?
Well, actually, the emphasis is not going to be on one region versus another region. I think there's no question that we have spent a good deal of time. I mean, this is well known. It's public information in terms of the largest number of new countries that we've gone into over the last several years have been in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. And for all the trauma and the Sturm und Drang, I like to say to the people back at Peace Corps, they did it, and they should feel good about the fact they did it, because Peace Corps is in those countries. We are on the ground. We are, for example, in Russia. We're not in Moscow. We're not just the consultant who flies in, who gives 2 weeks of his or her great advice. Our volunteers are working every day, working with people. We're in Armenia, even in the middle of the winter, we're in Armenia. And the Armenians, would kill before we would leave, not kill us. They don't want to. We were worried just given the weather and some of the problems there, because we have to keep an eye on safety. So, yes, we've moved a number of volunteers in there, but I want to remind everybody who thinks that all of a sudden the emphasis has changed. The largest numbers of volunteers still to this day are in Africa. We don't just go by 25%, 25%, 25%. We have, as I say, a much more sophisticated programming operation. So the idea isn't for us to say, you will take volunteers in this particular area, we will only send you volunteers, but to hear from the countries what they think they would most need. So, for example, we just had a team come back from Eritrea doing a country assessment, meeting with the officials there to try and figure out what they thought would be the most appropriate types of skills, and then we will try, if we are able to meet those skills. We've begun those discussions with Cambodia as well. So this isn't a matter, and by the way, we're not talking about the 1,000 volunteers going in those two countries. We believe in starting with smaller numbers and building once the programs are going in some cases. That same analysis, as I pointed out, will go on in other countries where we are to determine whether the programming that we're doing there still makes sense or whether we want to shift some of that programming. For example, some of our programming in Eastern Europe, which has been very heavily focused on business and business English, is also now evolving into a third area, which is some environmental management activities. So, again, we are request-driven. Our programming is generally going to be request-driven. We will try and provide volunteers with the skills that these countries think they need, and in some cases we think this is something that Peace Corps isn't the most effective at. Somebody else might be more effective. Doesn't mean it's a bad request. It's just not our forte. We'll also try and make it clear there. So that's where we are. We will continue to function in all parts of the world.
Is there any talk of sending the Peace Corps volunteers to Vietnam?
We do not have a request from Vietnam at this point, and indeed, I suppose there are a couple other things that one has to take in mind. I said that to be in the Peace Corps, you have to be 18 and a U.S. citizen and not in the CIA, and we also need to have a request. It also has to be a country that the United States has recognized, and we're not at that point. And then one additional thing, and we don't rule that out. I mean, Southeast Asia is clearly a place around which there has been discussion both internally in Peace Corps and informally outside of Peace Corps to Peace Corps. But obviously safety and security issues are a concern to us always, and I don't want to limit that to Southeast Asia. Just in the time I've been there this year, we have, because of our concerns that we could not assure the safety of our volunteers in Burundi, for example, we had to evacuate from Burundi. We've had to evacuate from a number of African countries over the last year or so. In some cases, we're able to go back in. In some cases, we conclude that we cannot do that. A couple years ago, we evacuated from the Philippines. We have and we think that was appropriate to do. We have subsequently re-entered the Philippines, and in fact, we'll see a modestly growing program in the Philippines. And Philippine ambassador was just in the other day asking for additional volunteers. But there are still some places where we're not prepared to do that. So, obviously, recognition, a request from the country, safety issues are all issues that have to go into account before one can send a volunteer in. But Southeast Asia is obviously an area that there at least is some review going on at this point.
This questioner says, you mentioned sending volunteers to China. Is that appropriate given the country's well-documented human rights abuses and the fact that its economy is booming?
Well, the answer to that from Peace Corps' perspective is that Peace Corps has, from the time it was created, celebrated and been very happy to operate under the following. It is an autonomous agency that is, while part of overall foreign policy, we're Americans and part of foreign assistance dollars and foreign policy, we have historically not been seen, and this has been repeated constantly in official cables out from Secretaries of State and Peace Corps directors, we are not part of short-term foreign policy. We are not a government-to-government program. We are a people-to-people program, a grassroots program. We keep our volunteers out of politics, big P politics, whatever their views are, and it doesn't mean that they may not become political someday. We keep them out. So it doesn't mean that we think every country is perfectly run in the world. Indeed, one could probably find a few problems even in this country that we sit in. But what we do is try and work at the local level not to insert ourselves in these kinds of issues. If we think that because of some of these issues, our volunteers would not be safe or it's inappropriate, we might not put them there. But they work with people at the grassroots level. We have concluded in some cases, quite honestly, that because of economic improvements in a country, it was time for Peace Corps to declare Peace Corps victory and leave. That doesn't mean that everything was perfect either. But in the past, we've been in Korea. We concluded at some point that there really was no longer a need for Peace Corps to be in Korea. Because of economic reasons. Similarly, Malaysia. On the other hand, there have also been some countries where we've been who've concluded that by having Peace Corps and other foreign assistance programs there, it made them more third world countries, and they were not that, and I would put Brazil and India into those categories. So we've come out of some countries based on booming economies in the past. On the other hand, in terms of China, we have 18 volunteers working in Sichuan province. They are, for those of you who are volunteers who understand what ET means in volunteer language, volunteer gobbledygook, which is that occasionally some volunteers come home early. Sometimes they decide that they really do love their boyfriend that they left home, or they don't like Peace Corps, or they get sick, or they just want to come home. That happens sometimes. We have not had one volunteer leave the China program. They're working. They're really enjoying it. They're, I think, doing a good job. Their counterparts in China really, and just some of our regional director just came back, I think really appreciate what they're doing. And we think we're playing a real role at the local level in Sichuan province.
Now, the U.S. Agency for International Development has been closing missions in several countries, or is planning to close missions. Will the Peace Corps remain in the countries where those missions are closed?
How's this for a good political answer? Well, maybe yes and maybe no. The answer is we will not close a Peace Corps post based on either AID or the State Department or USIA closing a mission alone. I mean, obviously, we take a look at what's going on, and we have to make sure that we can adequately communicate with our volunteers and protect our volunteers and provide the services for our volunteers. We will close posts or we will close programs if we conclude that it is time for those programs and for us to be out of those programs. But really, that is a judgment that we think is, and we respect the fact that those other agencies make a judgment that they can best service whoever they've been servicing out of perhaps a regional office, and we may conclude that as well. But that would not be the reason that we would get out of a particular post at this point.
Now, when you were a Peace Corps volunteer, you must have been sitting there saying, boy, those guys back in Washington, if they only did it this way, it would be, this is the way they should do it. Now that you are running the show, are you taking any of those complaints that you had 30 years ago and making those changes?
Well, to tell you the truth, I actually think the volunteers could care less who's back in Washington. I think the volunteers' gripes are all with who's in their local country. You know, like that country director, what an idiot. I could do better than she's doing, or I could do better than he's doing. And then the country staff, they're the ones who can't stand it that we in Washington are butting into what they're doing. So it's really, I mean, the volunteer in the field has no idea, I think, what's going on in Washington. Washington is like some far-off place. So it's like these different levels. I don't mean to take it lightly. We hear from the field sometimes that we in Washington micromanage them a little too much, so we're trying to figure out ways to do that. We hear from the field sometimes that they don't know all the time what's going on, so we're trying to work on that. We're trying to improve our communications. We can now actually email, in most cases, most of our posts. We can email almost everybody in Latin America, and yet there are some parts of, and in many parts of Africa, and yet there are parts of Eastern Europe that we're not able to at this point. Then, along with all this, we have to think about, well, if we can communicate much more clearly, quickly, what can be communicated over this? There are always challenges to dealing with all these countries. We were hiring a head of medical services recently, and I thought about saying, well, we could advertise it as the director of a 96-country HMO. Because there's just so much diversity that you have to deal with out there. We get complaints, as you always would, too much paperwork. So we're trying to take a look at that. We actually have a little project going on taking a look at the number of forms and reports that are required to see whether we can slim those down and use and combine and get rid of some and what's useless and how did this get started. And Peace Corps has, I don't know whether you're aware of this, I think most of the former volunteers are, but Peace Corps actually has its own term limitations rule. Again, I'm not making a judgment on whether that's good or bad in terms of term limitations, but in Peace Corps, as staff, you can only work for Peace Corps for 5 years. On your fifth anniversary, no matter how good you are, you have to leave. And that was written into our legislation. We have one amendment to that that says 15% of Peace Corps staff can work a whole additional tour, which is another 2.5 years. So our real old-timers have been there 7 to 8 years. And literally, you turn into a pumpkin on the day that your time is up. And so we are forever reinventing the wheel. It is a personnel nightmare, but it does create, as you might expect, this is typical Peace Corps. Peace Corps didn't want any old, stuffy old bureaucrats in Peace Corps. So it does keep us always new and always energetic. It also means we always keep forgetting why we started a project sometimes. And so we're always trying to return to say, now what? Now this was really a good idea. Who started this project? Or Or I preface everything. I run down the hall. I have this great idea at night, and I say, whoa, this is a really terrific idea. Why don't we do such and such? And then you watch some of the folks who have been there for a while go, let's see, we tried that in 82. Then we tried that in 87. And, you know, so we do, you know, we do try and keep up to date. But that's, I think that's the level of the local volunteer has their complaints with the local staff, the country staff have their complaints back there. But I do wake up each morning, and I basically think I'm motivated by somebody in my ear as a return volunteer saying, what are those idiots in Washington doing now? So I hope I keep remembering that.
It so happens that when your predecessor, Elaine Chao, spoke here, I happened to have introduced her, and she was talking about sending volunteers to Russia. And a couple of months later, I did a story about those volunteers going to Russia, and one of them said, you know, I heard about it on the, I was listening to National Public Radio, and I got excited about it and decided to volunteer. So given that we probably have many potential people out there, volunteers, what skill requests are most difficult for you to fill? Which of them are the easiest? And do you know that off the top of your head?
Well,
it's a test.
I'm always out pitching for everybody. Everybody from carpenters to metal workers to people who've started their own businesses and run their businesses to those wonderful generalists out there who speak other languages. We always need healthcare workers. We need math and science teachers. Patty, you're supposed to start putting up signs for me to tell me other kinds of people we need. Do we need journalists? Well, we can always use good writers. That's I think there may be a relationship there. I'm not sure, but we need above all. I hope I've given some skills out there. I said we still, agriculture and education and health, our traditional fields, are very important to us. We just want to make sure our programming is relevant to today. Our two fastest growing areas, as I said, are environment and business, and there's a whole range of skills we're looking in there. In environment, everything from the environmental engineer to somebody who's worked in the National Park Service for a couple summers, who've had experience working in a park system, because we work with national parks around the world. I visited one in Thailand when I was there. I visited a park where they protect the Quetzal when I was in Guatemala. We have our volunteers working there. And we increasingly have requests for business volunteers. I had a visit the other day from this wonderful Livewire ambassador from the Kyrgyz Republic here to the United States, and she came in and Fred O'Regan, I knew Fred was here. She came in to see us, and she said, we love our volunteers. They're doing a great job, and we're delighted that they're teaching, but we heard that Kazakhstan has business volunteers, and we want business volunteers, too. And so Fred and I said, well, you know, we have to make sure we have good programming. We need to have good sites for them. We need to have good jobs. She said, could we have them by June? So we want all of those skills, but mostly we want people who are, as I said, willing to learn a language. In Peace Corps, we deal with people. Yelling at somebody louder in English doesn't cut the mustard in Peace Corps. You really you got to be at least willing to learn the language. We want people who are adventurous, and I'm not, you know, they have to be the people, whatever age, whatever their background, whatever their skill, who really do see the glass half filled and not half empty. Because you have ups and downs in Peace Corps. We know that. We've seen that through the 30 years. I mean, you get to that 6 months, and you're sitting there, and you're saying, what am I doing here? I can't believe another year and a half I have to be here. Why don't they understand? I'm going to make things different. And you get to just after the first year, and you think, oh, my God, there's only 9 months left. There's not enough time left to get to do the job I want to do. So we want people who really are adventurous, who are willing to go out there, try different things, and we want people who are flexible. So if you've even thought about it, even if you think you've passed by, give us a call. We actually have an 800 number, which will get out on the air somehow. Our 800 number, toll-free 800 number. I don't have a chart to say my 800 number is 1-800-424-8580. We'll answer any question that you have. 800-424-8580.
Before asking the last question, of course, I'd like to remind you of our 800 number for tapes, transcripts, video, audio tapes. It's 1-800-500-9911. And before asking the last question, of course, I'd like to present you with this Press Club mug, which you certainly need, and this certificate of appreciation. Now, the last question is, we all know what happened to the woman who killed the spiders in Guatemala. She went on to great things. What happened to the volunteer who killed the snakes?
Actually, this is the guy I was stationed with. There were two of us way up in the northern part of Guatemala, the Petén, if any of you have visited Guatemala. And, I, as you've heard, I came back from Peace Corps, and I went to law school and Wall Street law firm and ran for office, and in those days was successful. And it wasn't until the 80s when I ran for office and the voters overwhelmingly decided I should go back to the private sector in that election. In any case, and the fellow I was stationed with, a really great guy from Noblesville, Indiana, I thought, what's ever going to happen to this guy? Gee whiz. You know, is he really going to make something out of himself? Well, typical Peace Corps. The guy I was stationed with was Tim Kraft, who ultimately became the appointment secretary to President Carter, served in the Carter administration, and has subsequently been very active in international work and real estate work and consulting, and I think is in New Mexico. And I actually know how to reach him because when I was named to the Peace Corps, position of director in the Peace Corps while I was going through the process, I frantically tried to find his telephone number to get him before anybody else got him to say, okay, Tim. I don't care if it bears no relationship to reality. Let's just get the stories straight here. I mean, it just kind of sounds like we were in the same place for the same 2 years. So I'm pleased to report that Peace Corps volunteers, the only people you know who can sit at a black tie dinner and talk about the worst diseases you've ever thought about, that we got our stories straight. And so it was a great 2 years there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And that can-
You've been listening to the Internet Town Hall, a production of the Internet Multicasting Service in association with the National Press Club. You may copy this file and change the encoding format, but may not resell the contents or make a derivative work. Support for the Internet Town Hall comes from Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Additional support is provided by HarperCollins and Persoft. Network connectivity is provided by UUNET Technologies and MFS DataNet. This is Carl Malamud for the Internet Multicasting Service, Town Crier to the Global Village.